Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and I'm very excited to introduce you to today's guest who might be able to use your help. So I want everybody to listen to this story and get real pissed off along with me and be inspired to help her out. So I would like to introduce Tanea. Welcome. How are you doing?
Very good, Dr. Timmery. Thanks for having me on.
So right now you are raising money on Kickstarter for your documentary, and I love the title.
Poor mom.
Yes. You know, that is only the second thing that you find when you look that up on Google. There's a couple of other instances of it. So this whole documentary is based around a custody dispute that is ongoing at this point. Is that true, or is it?
No, the case has actually already been decided.
Okay.
And despite reports from the court's officials that describe emotional abuse, despite the children asking to be removed from the home, it was decided that based on advertisements for Tantra that were placed a year and a half ago, that was evidence that this is my current lifestyle and that the children were better off with the father. I want to be clear. I'm a sex worker. I am not, however, a prostitute. Sex work involves many different aspects of the adult industry, and there are many different jobs within there. Mm-hmm. And I have been a prostitute. I do not deny that. I readily admit it. It's a part of my distant history as well as my recent history. I was a stay-at-home mom for 13 years. I took care of my kids. I was a really good mom. My oldest daughter went into the International Baccalaureate program. I was in the schools all the time, no daycares. It was just an ideal situation. The kids were really, really well cared for. My husband was a good father. It wasn't until after our divorce that he had to raise the kids on his own that all of the additional abusive behavior started to occur. When it comes to a custody decision, the courts find that parent, despite even current allegations of abuse, is the more appropriate choice than a mother who's a sex worker.
Okay, so the court has decided that it is better for the children to be in a home from which they have asked to leave because of abuse and neglect, that is a better situation for the children than to live with a woman whose job, either currently or previously, related to sexuality work. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And there's two things that I want to articulate at this point. One is, during the time that this case was at trial, I left sex work entirely. I left the adult industry, and I started a new business under the advice of my lawyer. He said that regardless of whether or not I was a prostitute, just being involved in the adult industry would cause me a problem at trial. So I had this advice ahead of time, and I felt like it was unfair to force me to change careers, but I did whatever they advised would be the best way to get the children back. So I opened a catering business. I ran that catering business for approximately a year before I moved into a restaurant. I subleased a kitchen at a bar and started providing the food service at the bar. My son worked there in the pub with us in the kitchen. And this was a thriving, documented, licensed business that I was actively involved in. The guardian ad litem came and investigated that business. She walked into my kitchen and met my employees and talked to them and understood that I had this business going on. Well, then they said because of that business that was going to take away too much of my time. But I said, wait, I have a whole cast of employees so that the shifts are covered after the kids come home from school. Now, mind you, I live right across the street from the restaurant. I want to make that clear. When they go to bed, I can go close down the kitchen, close down the restaurant, and come back home. You know, no problem at all.
So is there this level of scrutiny towards your ex-husband at all? Like, is there any concern about what he does for a living or how frequently he's at home? Like, what?
Not only was there no concern, But there wasn't even an investigation. My husband has not filed taxes in 10 years. 10 years. The guardian ad litem asked him what he does for a living. He, you know, explained that he was a carpenter. And that was it. She never visited him at work. She never even verified that he had a job. When it came to financial affidavits, which is a requirement during a divorce, I submitted all of my bank and accounting records for my restaurant, for the catering business, and also submitted a business plan for a tantric education kit that would be retail product, purchased at an adult store, take it home, that's it. Not personal appointments, not personal instruction, just a retail product. But it's a business that I was working on, and because my money goes into that business, I had to relay that to the court. So they knew that there was a process of a product that would be coming out in the future. So they did know that, but my job and my activities were at the restaurant. My financial affidavit, I had to include all of those statements, my tax returns and everything else. John, you know what he did? He wrote down $3,000 a month. He makes $3,000 a month according to his financial affidavit. Were there bank statements? No. Did he have any pay stubs? Nope. Could he tell me even who he was working for? No.
Are you familiar with other cases that are similar to this that perhaps other women who work or men who work in sex work experience similar things to this? Have you heard other stories?
Yes, I have, Dr. Timmery. Sadly, it's true. Many, many cases, both in the U.S. and abroad. The Honest Courtesan reports about a case in Sweden. But more locally, the case in Sweden was particularly important because they wound up removing the child because he had a cavity, because the mother was a sex worker. In California right now, I've just gotten word of two cases where sex work has been used to prevent the mother from having custody of the children. In one case, the mother left sex work and had a fraud unit, I guess, assigned to her case, who declared that because of the clothing that she was wearing, that she must be involved in sex work. I guess they had her under surveillance and were following her, and they couldn't prove where she was going or what she was doing, but they said that her activities must have involved sex work because of the clothing that she was wearing. So in my case, there's another case in California as well. The other case in California is a stripper. She was actually involved in political activism and crossed paths with a mayor and I guess got on his bad side. And between the mayor and the ex-husband, they used sex work to steal her child away. It's happening more and more often. And I continue to get contacts every day at whoremom.org. Where people are saying that they know of an individual that this has happened to. What I'm struggling to find are people willing to step forward and speak about it. And the reason is because the stigma against whores and the discrimination against any type of sex worker is so great that we're afraid to stand up and even mention it. We don't want to talk to our friends about it. We don't want our families to know about it. It's almost like forced silence. You know, we're afraid to speak up because we're going to be treated even worse. But because we're hiding the fact that we're being treated badly, no one is standing up to help us.
And I want to just talk about specifically, like, obviously there's a lot of stigma, there's a lot of taboo around anything related to sexuality, and specifically sex work. There's, you know, that it's along a spectrum, of course, of different things that people can judge externally. But one of the many reasons that people go into sex work is because it actually is a job that's quite useful for someone who's a mother. The hours can be fairly flexible. They're usually not the hours when you need to be, you know, taking care of your children. So I find it really ironic, since it has literally nothing to do with, you know, how you actually parent. And it actually is, you know, kind of a way to enable you to have more time with your children, because the pay per hour can be much better than a lot of other jobs, rather than being gone for extended hours of time to make minimum wage. And it's like, aside from the stigma, it just seems incredibly
appealing.
Yeah. It's just like not pragmatic to make it harder for mothers to make a living. I don't know.
That's a very good point. And that is why, after all of this time and the year and a half that I, you know, wasted so much time and money to try to conform to what they wanted me to be. I tried so hard to do what they wanted me to do, and I was successful, and I did it for a year and a half. But that still wasn't good enough for them, because once a whore, always a whore. So I still faced the discrimination, even with ads that were a year and a half old for Tantra, which is not prostitution. Tantra is different than prostitution. I have not been involved in prostitution since shortly after my husband and I split. When this came to court, and I realized that I was still facing the same discrimination that I would as an active sex worker, as a former sex worker, I said to myself, why in the heck would I want to continue to be dirty every day, working so hard, sweating, and you know, 18 hours a day back and forth to the kitchen, and, you know, staying up with a barbecue grill, putting charcoal on it every hour, like, you know, doing all of these things, when I made more money in a much better way as a sex worker? Some people say that sex work is demeaning. I didn't feel that way. I had the opposite experience, in that sex work gave me back my self-esteem that I had lost in a long marriage with someone who was very abusive to me. It made me feel pretty again. It made me feel accepted and desired, and it made me feel like a woman. It gave me more free time. Like you said, I could work maybe 2-3 days a week, a couple hours a day, and have the same income that I did running a business for a whole, you know, week. And yet it took a lot more of my time away from my family. So for me to be a single parent now, with my children's needs in mind, and, you know, having more time for them, to me, sex work is the right choice. It's not my only choice, but it's what works best for me. You know, I don't see it as something bad. But when we watch and we start to pay attention to television from a different perspective, you start to see the reason why. When we're watching TV, we see prostitutes depicted in such a demeaning and awful way that the general public still views prostitutes in that way. It's antiquated, because that's not a good representation of who we are. The modern professional reality of sex work is much different. I have administrative work. I have actual, the smallest portion of my job is actual sessions. The largest portion is emailing, advertising, market research, scheduling appointments, reputation control, just like a regular business. You understand? So the majority of my work as a sex worker is done behind a desk. So I think that the common person would be shocked by that. They picture that sex work is something very different than it really is in a modern world. I once met someone who didn't know that I was a sex worker and was referring to someone else. And she's like, well, she's probably a whore anyway. I'd have money too if all I had to do is lay down on my back and open my legs. And I looked at her and I said, really, do you think it's that easy? And she just looked at me like, what? And she kind of looked away with this confused look on her face. And I thought, people are so naive that they think that hookers just lay on their backs. That's not what we do. That's such a...
Well, and I think that's kind of also beside the point of whether the job is requires the things, because the judgment comes from the fact that there's any sex involved at all, really. Like, whether it's a minuscule portion or a huge percentage of it, people, I think, have just a general judgment about whether or not you're allowed to make money that way. And like the argument that I would make is that, you know, on the spectrum of behaviors where you give of yourself either physically or, you know, emotionally, spiritually, every job falls somewhere on there. And I don't understand why it's intrinsically sinful to, you know, have sex for a living, but if you beat up your body terribly doing contracting roofing for 30 years until the point that you can't stand up straight, that's somehow good work. That's hard work. But you know, you're only allowed to use your body in certain ways if you're a woman, basically.
You know, in America, sex is the one thing that's legal to give away for free mm-hmm. and illegal to sell. It's the one thing. There's nothing else that compares to it. And it really comes from way, way back before written history. The double standard of men are okay when they sleep around, but women are whores or sluts, basically comes from the idea of ownership of children. You know, mm-hmm. this came from before men were aware of their role in conception. Women were viewed as goddesses. Sex was a celebration. They thought babies come from this woman. She must be a goddess. She must be, something to be worshipped. And women were worshipped. And sex was something that was a celebration. It was something that a woman could bestow upon a man as a gift. It could be because he needed it. It could be because he deserved it. Or it could be because she loved him. But sex was used in many different ways. However, once the nomadic tribes started getting around that, you know, were breeding cattle, and men started to find out about their role in conception, there was money involved. There was the factor of inheritance and family genealogy. And that's when it started to become important that we know who the father is. And that's when the chastity belts came around, and we had to, you know, it became sinful for a woman to lay with anyone but her husband. Why is that? It's because we are still viewed as being owned by the male that we're with. So for a woman to reject that notion of patriarchy and reject the idea that our bodies and our decisions should be controlled by what society thinks is sinful.
So from what I'm getting from that, the purity myth around women is that to be in opposition to sex work, to have a blame or shame-filled approach towards sex work, is intrinsically a sexist position to take? Is that something you would agree with?
It basically originates, like I said, when the male-dominated religions started to come into play. In pre-written history, when, you know, goddesses were worshipped like Ishtar, then at that point, women were, like I said, able to gift and give sex and share sex. It was a community event. It was something that was even holy and sacred. There were, as time went on, even temple prostitutes. And still in other nations, we see temple prostitutes where men go there, and it's a cleansing. It's a spiritual experience. It's not simply a horny guy that wants to bend some girl in a short skirt over a dirty bathroom sink in a truck stop. That's not what it is. The professional reality is very different. But I'm not saying that it doesn't exist as I've just described it. Yes, that exists. It's like restaurants. An owner of a hot dog cart is going to have a different experience than an owner of a five-star restaurant. They're both in the food service industry, but they're at opposite ends of the spectrum. There are some dark and shaded corners of sex work and prostitution that would include some behaviors like I've described. That's there. There is a dark side of prostitution that involves, you know, violence against women and trafficking of people that are not wanting to be involved in that business. My argument is that it's the criminality of the act of prostitution that allows those things to happen. Whenever you criminalize something, just like we know from Prohibition, there are crimes that occur in the surrounding areas of it because of the secrecy involved. If sex work and prostitution were decriminalized, we would not only see a decrease in violence against sex workers, but we would also see a decrease in trafficking. If I didn't have to fear police, I could report if I come across an underage person or even a client. Suppose a client responds to an ad on Backpage, and he arrives at a hotel room and finds a 15-year-old girl. Now, what is he going to do? Is he going to call the police and let them know? Of course not, because he subjects himself to criminality and persecution by the police or future problems because he's admitting that he was involved in prostitution. However, if it were decriminalized, that same client wouldn't have to just turn away and act like he didn't see anything. He could say, hey, listen, I went to see a sex worker and it turned out that she was 15 and this is where she was. Without criminality, we could focus our effort on finding the victims of trafficking rather than chasing around innocent women that are completely voluntarily engaging in this activity just to support their families and earn a living and stay off of the welfare rolls. I pay taxes every year. I think that we could really take a second look at this and make a better tomorrow for women everywhere.
Yeah, we've spoken with Jessie Nicole. She's a regular contributor to the show from the Sex Worker Outreach Project. So, yeah, the list of examples of ways in which decriminalization would make life so much easier for so many people. We've got the sheer fact that we have police force even assigned to that when there are crimes with actual victims that are going on. Investigated due to lack of funding and manpower, that alone should be reason enough. I could get very tangential on the number of things that we can save money on.
And even now, Dr. Timmery, even now they've gotten a little sneaky, okay? There are no federal laws against prostitution specifically, so federal money cannot be directed at prostitution specifically. So historically, states and cities, have not devoted a tremendous amount of attention to it because they really didn't have the funding. But now things have changed. Now the word human trafficking has come into play. Now it's not prostitution, it's human trafficking. And every case is automatically assumed that if a woman is on Backpage, she must have a pimp. If a woman tours, she must be with an agency, whatever the case may be. So the fact that human trafficking is such a buzzword now, they've been able to divert federal funding now to fight prostitution because they're not calling it prostitution. They're calling it human trafficking. Two different issues. Mm. We're conflating them together, though. So now this criminalization not only keeps cops tied up, but we're using our federal budget and our federal employees to track people like me. And I've got the proof. You can see it on my website where the United States government, the United States courts, and many federal organizations have been on my website, clearly investigating me. So my question is, with the economic situation that our country is it really worth it?
Well, obviously, I would agree with you. So speaking of money, one of the many reasons I wanted to make sure we talked to you and talked to you when we did is that you're still looking for some more support for your documentary on Kickstarter. Do you want to talk about how that's going so far? Are people being supportive?
Absolutely. The outpouring of support for Whore Mom it's endearing. I've seen backers now from Dubai, from Sweden, from Germany. And not only are they supporting the project, they're supporting me personally. When you watch the film, you'll realize that a small portion of the film is devoted to my experience with whorephobics. Just like homophobia, there is whorephobia. And the behavior, you can look it up, the behavior is dangerous. It can escalate. It can become violent. It's very dangerous to deal with. And I've got a situation, the person who is now living with my ex-husband is just completely obsessed with me. And without giving her the benefit of devoting too much time to her, I do want to say that she has launched a war against me. I call it the war on the whore. And she degrades me and, hurts me in any way possible. Well, she's found out about Whore Mom and she is pissed off. So she gets on Twitter and starts talking about you're a whore that lays on your back for a living and blah, 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 and all these just hateful remarks, right? So I ignore them for the most part. What I found was, as people are following me with Whore Mom, they're standing up. I don't even have to stand up and defend myself. They're standing up. And I noticed this person was in a Twitter war till 3 a.m. Sunday morning. That was the last that I heard, with my supporters that are now standing up for me with her because the police are doing nothing. But I have to understand that the cyber stalking laws, the laws that are there to protect people, are there to protect quote unquote real people, not whores like me. You see, the person who's stalking me is a lawyer. Well, she graduated from law school, but she's not a real lawyer. She's a paralegal. She works in a cubicle. But she's very knowledgeable about the law, whereas I'm a whore. So when I go to the police, how do you think they respond? They just don't. So I thought, surely, you know, they keep promising if the behavior continues, we'll make an arrest. Well, the behavior continues. I've added 6 additions to the police report in the last week. And then today the police contacted me and I let them know about the Twitter thing, because she went so far as to call me a crack addict. And I don't even know where she got that from. Making comments about my children being disgusted with me. She says her children are disgusted with her. Yes, they know what she does. They've been told. It's just horrible. Even with this constant tirade, not only against me, but against my documentary project, the police still are not taking action. And I think that that's important to notice. And that's the only reason why I mention it, is because no matter what is done, the hooker's always wrong. You know, it's always me that's the bad parent. It's me that's the instigator.
And it seems a very interesting prioritizing there. The police efforts and attentions are focused on preventing pleasure from happening. Because God forbid anybody have some sex.
Have an orgasm. God forbid.
but you know, like the difficulties of obtaining a restraining order, of abstain, you know, of getting abusive situations, the attention that they need seems to be far more challenging than getting somebody arrested for a very nonviolent generally.
Well, that's right, but you have to think about it. You have to ask yourself, where's the money? And the police departments have this focus on prostitution right now. Why? Because when they arrest a guy for soliciting, they get to steal his car and then they get to auction it and they keep the money. When they bring down escort services that are, you know, legitimately running businesses, they can steal their property and their homes. Prostitutes make money, and when they're arrested, they can confiscate all of their belongings. Do you understand? So there's money in it for them. So yeah, they're going to fight that, just like they fight the war on drugs, because when they get these drug arrests, they get to confiscate all the stuff. And then they get more what from the federal government? Money. It's all about money. Now ask yourself, with a situation like this, all they're doing is protecting a whore? No, they're not going to do that. They're not interested in that. They have no time for that, but they've got all the time in the world to catch whores, you see? Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
So out of curiosity, what is it that you do now?
Well, currently, I'm a filmmaker.
Oh, fair enough.
But when you're, I think that what you're asking me is about Tantra. Is that correct?
Or, yeah, I'm just curious now, because you have sort of, you mentioned a few different things, but I'm just curious.
Right, well, prostitution, well, it is a very acceptable way of life to me. But, you know, I'm getting a little bit older, and think about where you were in your career when you first entered it. You grow and you progress and you move into different aspects maybe of the same industry, and that's where I'm at. I did that stint with the restaurant and catering thing, but it just wasn't me. It's not what I'm good at. It's not what I love. It's not what makes me happy. I'm comfortable and happy in the adult industry. So for me, my path carried me on this journey toward Tantra. It was something that I discovered shortly after my divorce, and I began to research it, and I began to learn about it, and I began to fall in love with it. And it was a healing process for me, coming out of an abusive relationship. It was very spiritual. It's based on meditation. So I began to take that and combine it with different aspects that I know about touching a man and a woman. And I began to ultimately create a different form of lovemaking. I call it tantric fusion. It's not the ancient form of tantra that's based on Sanskrit religion with the chanting and the things that a lot of people aren't really comfortable with. It's a more modernized version of that, neo-tantra, if you will, which we do get involved in the meditation and the guided imagery and the spiritual connection. But it's a lightweight, less religious version. What it's helpful with is people with intimacy problems, relationship problems, pain during intercourse, things like this. It helps them to overcome those problems. So I'm working to launch a retail product that individuals could purchase and learn to practice tantric fusion in the privacy of their own home. The idea came to me from clients, really, that said, man, I wish that I could have this experience with my wife, but how could I explain to her where I discovered it? You know, and this, I kept hearing this over and over, and the connection and the intimacy that tantric fusion creates is very powerful. And I believed in that too. So I started a business plan, which is still in the research and development phases, to launch that retail product. So I'm still working on that, as well as hosting couples retreats where they can come and learn about tantric fusion and break away to private areas to practice and then come back with their questions and we'll meet as a group. And I also am working on a film called Whore Mom. So I've been doing a lot of research and trying to find cases in which sex workers are willing to appear on camera and speak. And it's tough. Like I said, I find a lot of cases, but it's tough to find people willing to speak to me. But I'm making progress. And, you know, devoting my time to the fundraiser. The fundraiser is critical because, as you can see from the video on Kickstarter, I don't have professional equipment. The question was raised to me, why are you asking for money to buy equipment? Why don't you just hire a crew, you know, as if I were trying to pad the budget? Well, the reason is this. This isn't a documentary about GM, okay? This is a documentary about an illegal activity. So this is about sex work. The nature of the film is very personal and risky. To hire a film crew is very difficult because, A, there's a lot of trust involved, and B, there's a lot of risk that they would be exposed to. So hiring a crew to follow along on such a personal tour where they're taking a risk crossing state lines with an individual, see, they could be charged technically with human trafficking by the twisted feds that want to, you know, make a mountain out of a molehill or put something where there's nothing. You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. When there's males traveling along with a female involved in sex work and crossing state lines, the next thing that you're going to know, you're going to have a cameraman arrested on the Mann Act. So we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. What we are going to do is get the equipment ourselves. So I have a professional cameraman that's teaching me a lot of things. And I have a very, very close friend that's going to operate the camera, somebody that I trust and is willing to accept the risk involved in shooting the film. So that was a very difficult aspect there, is getting that under control as to how we're actually going to produce and edit the film. Now the difficult part is raising the budget that we need. The budget can be viewed at whoremom.org. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of support. I think that we're at $2,500 the last time that I looked that we've raised from a $15,000 budget. Mm-hmm. All we need is $15,000. Now there are stretch budgets, which could include a better presentation, better editing, and, you know, a higher quality outcome in the end that reaches up to $20,000. But basically, for $15,000, I can make this film, and I can make this whole big convoluted story come together into a streamlined, very organized and easy to understand, while also entertaining and captivating. Because we want the audience to be riveted by the story and want to learn more about what's happening to sex workers that are parents, we have to entertain. So we need to be able to have the facts and the interviews and the things that are compelling. You know, picture 48 hours. You know, we need to put the story together in a streamline so that it's easy to understand.
Awesome. So if people want to help you out, they have until, what is it, June 22nd on Kickstarter?
June 22nd is the deadline, and I am asking this. This is what I'm asking, $1. If you don't have money, if you're broke, I understand, I'm broke too. But if you can just pledge $1, if everybody just pledged $1, we could get there. If you can pledge more, please do. But without the money, there's no film. I can't, right now, the work that I'm doing on the film is the fundraising, because if we don't have the budget, we can't get the equipment, we can't tell the story, and basically this just stays in the shadowed corner where it is and makes all of the people that fight daily against whores, it allows them to continue to discriminate and abuse us. This is like Stonewall in 1969. It took Stonewall to get the homosexuals to have the Main Street citizens of America stand up and say, hey, that's not right. They might be gay, but we shouldn't treat them like that. Well, we've got to stand up now and show how we're being treated. And until Main Street of America can see the way that we're being discriminated against and see that the children are suffering, we have to protect these children. We cannot continue to break little hearts that don't understand why they've lost a mother. Ask my child why for 6 months she couldn't see me at all. What type of trauma does that cause when there's no abuse and there's no neglect? This story has to be told not just to protect sex workers and sex worker rights. When we talk about sex worker parents, we're also talking about protecting the rights of the child to that maternal influence.
I want to thank you very much, Tanea, for bringing your personal experience and putting a face on the issue of the incredible personal toll that many sex workers are subjected to just because this incredible stigma exists. So I want to thank you very much for telling your story.
It's my pleasure. And remember, it is not just the sex workers that we're talking about here, also but true. It's their kids that need protected.
Yeah.
And any of your listeners that want to support the project can just go to either www.whoremom.org to stay tuned with the updates on the blog, or you can go directly to Kickstarter, kickstarter.com, and search Whore Mom. I am sure I'll be the only project you find there.
And I very much look forward to your Tantric Fusion thing in the future. So I wish you the best of luck on the fundraiser and on your future business, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so thank you very much. And everybody, thank you for listening, and have a great day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Please check out more from sexwithtimmery.com, where Monday through Friday there's new content, including polls, weekly sex columns, and Friday sex links. And if you have any questions, comments, or violent reactions, please email them to sexwithtimmery@gmail.com. That's sexwithtimmare@gmail.com. And thank you.